Welcome back to another episode of the Sisters in Law podcast. I'm your host, Charity Gates, back with another incredible sister in law. The Sisters in Law podcast is a podcast that celebrates the diversity within the community of Black women by featuring intimate conversations and stories about their trials, triumphs, and tribulations navigating careers in the legal field. This week, we are chatting with an attorney who has a passion for all things intellectual property, or IP law. Kamanta Kettle is a commercial litigator and top 40 under 40 intellectual property lawyer, recognized by the National Black Lawyers Association. A child of immigrants from Jamaica, West Indies, Kamanta received her JD from Cornell Law School and bachelor's degree cum laude from New York University. Kamanta handles complex commercial disputes across a broad range of industries, including aeronautics, finance, and software engineering. In addition, she is a passionate trademark attorney who helps clients in the fashion, retail, and beauty industries protect their brand assets. She is currently a senior attorney at Aaron Fox Schiff. So, let's get into the interview. Hello, Kamanta. Welcome to the Sisters in Law podcast.
Hey, Charity. Thank you for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
I'm excited to dig in deeper about your career because I've followed you for a little bit after law school when we had a mutual connect us.
Yes, I'm happy he did.
Yeah. So the question that I like to ask to kind of get acquainted with my guests and so that the audience kind of knows a little bit about you for context, I always ask, what is your origin story and where are you and your people from?
So my people are from the island of Jamaica in the West Indies. And my dad is from the eastern part of the island in a parish called St. Mary. He's from a town called Anato Bay, and it's known for a lot of fishing and farming. And my mom is also from the eastern part of the island, from the capital, Kingston. And so my parents met in the 70s and emigrated to the United States, where they settled in Brooklyn, New York. And so as backstory, I actually learned that my dad, his maternal grandmother is a descendant of the Maroons, which is really awesome because for those who don't know, Maroons were Africans who evaded slavery in the Caribbean by hiding in the Blue Mountain regions of Jamaica. And so it was really powerful to learn that that's part of my genealogy and my lineage, and that we are from, you know, descendant from warriors. And then my mom's maternal grandmother was Cuban and emigrated to Jamaica. And then her family again settled in the eastern part of Jamaica in St. Andrew.
Wow, that's an incredible lineage. I'm sure that maybe in some ways that inspired your law school journey, which we'll get into soon. But on that note, can you talk about what initially inspired you to seek out law school and why you decided to attend law school and then ultimately choose the school that you went to?
Sure. So I would say my mom's influence really directed me towards going to law school. As a kid, I was very talkative and very argumentative, and she thought that those were great qualities for a lawyer. And so she always kind of steered me towards either being a lawyer or a doctor. And I did not like the sight of blood, so I decided that I was going to try law. And very early on, I was very purposeful about studying law, so pre-law in high school and then pre-law in college. And so I was ready, kind of like, and very focused by the time I got to law school that I was going to pursue that path.
Yeah, that's great. And can you talk about the law school you went to and what it was like going to school there at the time that you did, and what that experience informed or how it informed the rest of your trajectory or vision towards your legal career?
So again, my mom was a really influential figure in my life. And right before I graduated from college, she passed away. And so I remember growing up that she always said that she hoped I would go to an Ivy League school. And I think a lot of parents talk about that, but I kind of always remembered that. And so I had been set to go to one law school and was traveling when I got the news that I was accepted at Cornell. And it just came back to me what my mom would say as I was a kid, that she wishes I would go to, or she hoped I would go to an Ivy League school. And so I kind of picked up all my stuff at the very last minute and decided to go to Cornell because it was an Ivy school and I knew I would get a really good education. But I had come from an undergraduate school in the city of New York. I studied at NYU and it was very different being in Ithaca, New York, which is kind of rural and just a lot quieter than being in the city. So it did kind of inform my experience because I had just, again, like lost my mom. So I was kind of like entering law school after a time of tragedy, but also a really different environment. And I commuted to college. So I kind of had so many changes going on at the same time whereas like I had been living at home and kind of seeing this constant in my family, I started law school at the last minute, kind of like under really constrained circumstances alone. And so it was really a big transition for me. But I would say that the education at Cornell is top notch and really rigorous. And so I really could appreciate the academic side of law while I was there. And it kind of shaped my interest because they offer a lot of IP. And I eventually went into intellectual property as a field of study.
That's incredible. And kind of looking back over your law school career, the audience for this podcast is primarily people interested in attending law school and law school students. So I always like to ask lawyers, if you had any advice for yourself back in law school, what advice would you give?
Yeah, so the advice I would give to myself is be gracious with myself and really practice self-care. I think it's very easy as a law student to get caught up in the rigor of your study, the hours, and kind of the idea that there's one final test at the end of each semester. People really get worked up about that. And or they either go one way where they're really lax or they go the other way where they're really like, I have one shot to get this right. And so I would say I'd advise myself to enjoy law school and the process of it and not put so much stock into the final product or the final grade. I think I would have given myself a lot more, you know, patience and grace, as I said, had I been less focused on exams and more focused on the learning part of it.
Yeah, that's important. And I think lately, especially going through this pandemic experience, a lot of people have been emphasizing the importance of mental health and extending yourself grace and actually taking time and not rushing through life, at least even. So I think that's important. Can you talk about what inspired your interest in intellectual property and how that led you to your current career now? Like, can you talk about the different pathways you've taken on your journey so far?
Yes. So I started with an interest in entertainment law. In high school, I remember meeting attorneys who were from Proskauer. And so I knew that they worked really hard, but it seemed like there were types of lawyers out there who had more fun and went to parties and stuff, and actually did meet some people at one of my first jobs before law school, where I was like an administrative assistant and got to be surrounded by attorneys who met celebrities, and like celebrities would come to our firm. And so I was like, I want to practice that type of law because that seems really fun. In addition to being really awesome and like helping to create creative projects and so forth. So I would say at Cornell, the focus wasn't really on entertainment law being in Ithaca, but they did have classes in intellectual property. And I felt like that was close to my interest in entertainment. Like the curriculum was a lot closer to entertainment than some of our general coursework. And so I took classes in branding and marketing and the business of brands, as well as trademark and copyright. And I really enjoyed those classes the most. So when I left law school, that was what I wanted to do. I started as a summer associate and really wanted to focus on IP as my study and my field. And that is basically the beginning of the story of like focusing on IP law.
Of all the fields of law, people often say that intellectual property is the sexiest.
Exactly.
To be frank and honest, but can you talk about what areas of the law are inspiring you and what you're interested in with new developments in intellectual property?
Absolutely. So I just got back from INTA, which is a huge trademark conference that kind of gathers globally, like people who are trademark practitioners, as well as brand owners. And the big focus at the INTA conference was NFTs, in my view. Thankfully, I recently wrote an article on NFTs, and it's something that I resisted at first because it comes out of the whole cryptocurrency sort of developments and the technology around that. And that felt very technical for me. And so I've kind of tried to stay away from that. But with NFTs, they seem kind of different because of how people can monetize them as business owners. And so I thought that that was a really interesting learning process for me, drafting an article on that. And when I got to INTA, I felt like I was really knowledgeable when I sat down with other practitioners discussing topics with NFTs and cryptocurrency and Web3, et cetera. So I think that's one of the emerging areas right now as there are technological developments with brand owners.
Right. Yeah. And NFTs are so popular right now because basically no one really understands them. But they're so integral to what's happening with the metaverse and Web3 and all the things. So it's interesting when you find somebody that can actually talk about it and have things to say.
And people are really interested in the topic, I found, right? They're really interested or they're not interested at all. And I think I'm in the former camp of someone who's really interested in learning how people will be using NFTs in the future.
Right. Yeah, of course. And you've also worked in a variety of different environments over your career. Can you talk about the differences between them and what it's like to work in one environment versus another? Just as basically career advice for those looking at transitioning or wanting to know what they should do after law school, what types of environments there are to work in.
Sure. I'll start with during law school. I think in my second year summer, I was at the Brooklyn, in the Brooklyn Torts Division at the Brooklyn DA's office. And so that was a foray into criminal law. And it was really emotional. I actually joined the, what they call the Sex Crimes Division, which is now Special Victims. But I was mentored by a trial attorney. Her name was Christina Faye, and I always remember that because of the comedian. But right. To see into the aspects of being a criminal attorney, which was extremely emotional, actually. And I knew when I left that experience that that was not the area for me, only because it was really intense. And I mean, everything from young victims to like older people, computer crimes were really a hot topic back then. But when I graduated, I ended up going to what's called like big law. So private practice in a larger law firm. And I started as a summer associate back in 2007. Mm-hmm. And then I was a full-time associate at this large Wall Street law firm until like then 2014. And that experience as a young attorney right out of law school was really intense, honestly, and I didn't appreciate it fully back then, but there were really long hours and a lot of demands placed on us. And at the same time, not as much exposure to very substantive work in the beginning. So it felt like you spent a lot of time on really small pieces of larger cases, but they were really high stakes cases. And I would say what I took away from that experience was the importance of your cohort and how supportive they can be, but also how you're constantly evaluating your performance within that group of people, your class, as they say. So when I left my first firm, then I went to a smaller law firm very briefly, but also was a secondee by that law firm to go in-house. And so I spent some time in-house, and I'd say that was probably one of the best experiences I had practicing because it brought me really close to brands. Mm-hmm. I worked for a consumer products company that did beverage alcohol manufacture and distribution. I'm sure I can mention it, Diageo. And I just felt like the environment there was so fun and so connected to the product, but also they were so responsible about messaging and marketing to make sure that they were reaching out to the right type of consumer. And so after leaving Diageo, I was at a small boutique copyright firm, and That was a totally different experience because there were probably like three attorneys practicing in the entire firm, but there was tons of work because it was a smaller practice. It was a volume-based practice. And so the idea was like file complaints. We were plaintiff's firm. So I felt like within the time I was there, I filed over 100 lawsuits, and they tended to be lawsuits against the media industry. Mm-hmm. And I represented photographers for the most part. And so I felt like that experience was very, very different from my prior experience in big law. And in fact, kind of put me on to like the plaintiff's bar environment, which is so different than a defense bar environment, which you'll find typically in larger firms. And then I did spend time in a government setting as well. After leaving that firm, I was at the New York City Law Department under Zachary Carter. Mm-hmm. And I was there for about a year in their general litigation division, focusing on representing the DOE in like IDEA litigation, which is essentially special education law cases. And for me, that was personally rewarding because I had a young son at the time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the cases were around the failure or provision of faulty educational services to students with special needs.
Right.
And so I just thought it was really enlightening to know that the DOE was kind of dealing with these issues pretty constantly. And then I'm now back at a smaller firm, but it's a sort of storied firm with a really long history where I do litigation. And again, I think with smaller firms, you have a lot more responsibility than when you're at a large firm and you're kind of seeing only a piece of a large case. You might be at a smaller firm and get to specialize a lot more and kind of get your hands dirty by working on cases more substantively and writing more and drafting more, et cetera.
You've had such a wealth of experience that you just described. And this podcast is focused on creating community amongst Black women in the legal field. So how would you describe your journey as a Black woman in the legal field?
So I would say my journey as a Black woman was very similar to the journeys of other women and women of color in particular. I think a lot of us share the same stories, particularly when we are at large mainstream law firms. And those stories really revolve around being recognized for our contributions, getting the right sponsors and mentors in our organizations, and just sort of being supported as we progress through the ranks of larger institutions that are primarily white, male dominated. Mm-hmm. And so my experience was not any different in big law. I found that I could struggle with issues around having the right types of sponsors speak up for me, make sure I had the right assignments, make sure I was getting the right recognition and that I was getting good client contact. And so, you know, I think for me, it was really important for me to go somewhere where I felt like I could grow after a certain time. And so I was able to transition my career away from big law for a time and like into environments that were more hands-on. And I think that that addressed some of the issues I was feeling around lack of sponsorship or just kind of wanting to direct my career more and be more involved in the direction I was going.
And as a follow-up to that, what would you say is the best piece of advice you've received over the course of your career so far?
So I thought back about this because there was a colleague I had in one of my first firms who always used to say things like, you know, if you punch this guy in the nose, he'll bleed red blood, just like your blood. And it was what that meant was like you tend to, in places that are really hierarchical, you tend to put or give a lot of deference to people who are more senior than you, mm-hmm. more experienced than you, or just may have a more senior place on a team. And so as I was kind of navigating my place on those teams, sometimes I would be frustrated by just kind of like the issues that come with hierarchy and having to deal with somebody's, you know, particular whims. And I just remember this person telling me when I would get really frustrated that like, these people are just like you. It's just you're giving them so much mystique, I guess, and like so mm-hmm. much deference. But it kind of really helped with addressing issues like imposter syndrome for me and just my authenticity and making sure that I didn't lose that because I felt like, you know, I'm the junior person or my input is not as important. It really helped me kind of put myself in the perspective of I'm a human being worthy of the same respect as these other folks. These people have had their own journeys, and like, I need to recognize that as I'm navigating these relationships.
Mm-hmm. And what advice specifically do you have for fellow sisters-in-law that want to stake their claim in the intellectual property law field?
I would say intellectual property is awesome. Come. Like, we need more of this. We need, you know, women who can really stand out and represent brands that are very diverse, mm-hmm. honestly, and continue to be more and more diverse as we develop technologically in this world. And so I welcome women of color, women of all different backgrounds to come into this practice and really stake their claim, as you said, and learn the practice. It's fun. And it's really relatable, which is what I love about it. So yeah, that's my advice for them. Like, just remember who you are and put your like special stamp on things and you'll be successful.
Nice. Yeah, I love that. And kind of looking towards the future and your future in the legal world or not, wherever you see yourself, where do you see your career over the next decade, if we had to put a timeline on it?
Yeah, so because I'm really fond of the work that I do for brands, I hope that whatever I'm doing, whether that's in private practice or whether I'm closer to brands by working as a business partner with brands, that I am basically making good counseling decisions for the brands that I represent. And so that they see me as a partner and not simply a cost center or the naysayer, which a lot of brands tend to, you know, take issue with when they're dealing with their counsel. So I would say just kind of having more agency as I get more experienced in my profession and more control over the types of client relationships that I'm developing is something that I hope to have, whether again, like I'm in-house or I'm at a firm. That's something I hope to have in the future.
The final question, the trademark question of the podcast is, who is your sister-in-law? And this can be anyone who you admire, whether it's a celebrity or a fellow colleague from law school or someone that you've admired in practice. Anyone you'd like to shout out on the podcast?
Yeah. Oh, wow. You just gave me a nice menu of people that came to mind. So I'll say, as far as someone I admire as a sister-in-law, I'll mention Lisa Davis, who is an entertainment lawyer. Frankfurt Kern & Klein & Sells was actually one of my first law firms before even going to law school. And so I follow her career. She's been amazing. But in addition, I'd like to shout out my colleague, Robin Davis. She's a corporate attorney at my firm and is a really great like up and coming partner at the firm. So I'm really excited to follow her career as well.
Well, thank you for sharing your story, Kamanta.
Thank you, Charity, for having me. This has been really fun.
So is there anywhere that the audience can connect with you further?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter. I have an account called Police Your Mark. So police, like P-O-L-I-C-E, your Y-O-U-R mark on Twitter. And I'm also on LinkedIn. You can search my name, Kamanta Kettle.
Well, thank you for joining us today.
All right. You have a great one.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to my conversation with Kamanta. Be sure to connect with her on LinkedIn and Twitter if you want to learn more about her career. This will be the last episode of the season, so I will be taking a break from podcasting for a little bit. To find out when we will be sharing new episodes, please follow us on social media. That's at Sisters in Law on Instagram and at Sisters in Law Pod on Twitter. If you're listening to Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review so that more people can hear these powerful discussions. Let us know your thoughts on the episode via social media and follow to get updates on the next episode. As always, share the podcast with someone who may be interested or who may benefit from these discussions. For a full transcript of today's episode, please go to our website at www.sistersinlaw.org. Thank you for tuning in this week and stay tuned for a new season coming soon. Until then, peace and love.